you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Hi, I'm Parker Romaine.
And I'm George Chen.
And you are listening to SupDoc, the best show about documentaries on the internet.
That you're listening to right now. On today's episode of SupDoc, we recap the HBO docuseries McMillions, directed by Brian David Lazzart and James Lee Hernandez. We get into spoilers, obviously.
Yeah, and there are a few. But here's my take on McMillions. It's a very well-made true crime documentary about a crime that it seems like no one remembers or truly cares about today. How McDonald's million-dollar game was hacked and how the truth came to light. It's very entertaining, and some of the characters and people that make up this doc are super funny and very personable. And the themes run the gambit from greed to revenge. And in my opinion, this could have easily been a two- or three-part doc series, but the filmmakers did a great job of stretching it to six series.
Yeah, and my take on watching this, if you wanted a Mark Wahlberg-produced low-stakes version of an Ocean's 11-style caper, that's what I thought it was going to be based on the trailers. There is a little more heart to this than I initially thought there would be. And there's some relief to watch a true crime series that doesn't have a lot of gore in it. But was there anything to learn about society now from watching this? I guess just that tempting crimes of opportunity are all around us. And do not get your car shipped to Long Beach.
That's funny. And now here's our recap of McMillions.
I have a story for you.
This story has got everything. Revenge.
Drugs. Greed.
Ronald McDonald.
Somebody went to the FBI and said, guess what's happening?
The McDonald's Monopoly game was fixed. The Bureau thought it was just some BS story.
Fast food fraud was not making any list of priorities.
Are you kidding me? This is what makes my phone meter go.
McDonald's Monopoly game gave millions of people a chance to win.
But from 1989 to 2001, there were almost no legitimate million-dollar winners.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Byte Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, what's your secret? Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
So, to be perfectly honest, I literally just finished watching this documentary about 3 minutes ago.
Which is the best time to talk about it, right? If you have any lingering questions,
yes,
like they are all going to come out right now.
Well, I mean, like we were talking about before we started recording, George, it's very twisty, turny, lots of information. It's fairly sophisticated amount of experiences and things that you learn from this documentary.
I kind of got, after the third episode twist, I started to be like, okay, these twists are just like kind of bogus twists. Like they're like really just setting us up for like some major thing that never fully delivers. I guess there's a lot of letdowns in this. Started off promising. I actually was talking to some other documentary filmmakers that did not like this at all.
Oh, really? Yeah. What were the reasons? Well, it's kind of like candy. It's documentary candy, basically. But yeah. I'm interested, like, what did they say?
Not calling anyone out specifically. They were just like, it's super, like, on the nose. It just, like, starts with, like, Jane's addiction, been caught stealing.
Right.
And, like, okay. And then they just thought it was, like, basically ruining the form of documentary.
Yeah.
Like, it's like, you're right. Candy, like, I was curious because this did debut at Sundance last year with a 160-minute cut.
Wow.
Which might have been better.
Yeah.
Like, you're saying, like, yeah, you don't... I was actually like, there are so many people involved in this. There's so many roads to go down that I found myself... Yeah, they could have made it... I think they could have combined the fifth and sixth episode together, but there was a lot to cover.
There is a tremendous amount of information to cover, and I completely agree. Not all of it was necessary. Not all of it needed 20, 30 minutes of explanation. And I do think that it could have been easily condensed into something a little more palatable.
So, like, just to set the stage for anyone who just stumbled on this and does not know what we're talking about at all, do you remember the million-dollar Monopoly game from the 80s? It was starting in the late 80s. Was it, like, 89 when this all started happening? Or 86 is when they started it? And I kind of remember this. I kind of remember playing. I don't remember having the Monopoly board. But, you could win... certain tickets, you just had $1 million value. Certain tickets had like a $25,000 value, $50,000 value, and some were just like you get another soda.
I completely remember this game. I remember at work at the shoe store I worked at in Kalamazoo, Michigan, Oaken Brothers. What's up? That somebody had the poster on the wall. Like it was taped to the wall. I completely remember the McMillions Monopoly game. I also distinctly remember when it went away. And I don't remember this story at all. I do remember when they just stopped doing it, though.
I didn't remember that this had even come out, that there was a scam. That John Ashcroft, like the attorney general, came out and like right before 9/11, like announced that this was like there was a huge fraud at McDonald's. I wasn't really eating a lot of McDonald's at this point in time. I like to say, and I don't know if it's true. I don't remember any of that stuff happening, but I was thinking about the so basically there was a scam that we find out through the six episodes. You find out basically in the first episode. No. I think you find out who one of the people is in the first episode.
Yeah.
By the second episode, you find out there's two guys named Jerry.
Right. There's Uncle Jerry and Jerry. So there's Uncle Jerry, who we don't find out quite about for quite a few episodes, and then Jerry Colombo, who we find out a lot in the first few episodes.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're supposed to think at first that Jerry Colombo is Uncle Jerry, and then you find out there's another... Actually, also, his name is Gennaro. I'm surprised he's not Gene instead of Jerry. It's just one of those weird like nickname things. The way that like Jack is John, it doesn't make any sense.
I don't like that one.
Yeah, so there's Jerome Jacobson... Perfect villain name. That is a perfect villain name. That is a J. Jonah Jameson type name.
Oh, yeah.
And Jerry, like, I found it weird that like halfway through this thing, I'm like, I like the mafia guy better than this guy. Did you feel that way?
Wait, you like Jerry Colombo more than Uncle Jerry?
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's
of course.
Sort of like, it just becomes like you get more. If he had lived, I don't think he would have gotten this kind of as softball of a treatment.
No,
obviously. Yeah.
Well, you kind of brought up a headline. So maybe we should talk about that.
Oh, did I skip some stuff?
Well,
sorry.
Not necessarily, but I mean, we do mention in an intro, there are spoilers and we just had one, but he does die. Jerry Colombo dies episode five, I believe. Yeah. Episode five in a car accident with his wife and his son, and
they live. Yeah,
and it's pretty startling. Yeah, they those two live. Jerry passes away, and they say he was...
Internal damage.
Yeah, he was like, such a big guy, they didn't really understand that he had some internal damage going on. But, like, yeah, you're right. I mean, he kind of gets off with now. I mean, that was, what, 2000 or 2001 when he dies?
So we've I think it must have been, like, 98.
98, okay.
Yeah.
Sometime in that era. I mean, I guess my point is we have they have 20 years now to soften the image of Frank Colombo, you know?
Right.
I mean, Jerry Colombo, rather, where people can reminisce about him. But so, yeah, the first few episodes, we start to learn a lot about the McDonald's game, how it's played, how it's been hacked, and the FBI agents who are trying to solve it. One of the things I love about this, it really gives a glimpse into, like, the 90s America, where, like, our our big concern was, like, the, you know, the Monopoly game. Even at this point, around this point in, like, the Bush administration, they're basically saying, hey, we've picked up some feed that the terrorists are going to fly a plane into some buildings. And they're like, whatever, we got to solve this McMillions thing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they were like, was it like Jacksonville, Florida? It was like the financial crimes unit.
Right.
And that was like how it started.
Yeah.
It's just financial crimes. God, there's so many funny things that happen in this. This is like, it's entertaining. Like, I don't, yeah. Like, you just have to see this thing. Yeah. Like, one of my favorite lines, I'm really jumping around.
That's
in the last episode. It's just basically the prosecution. It's like the FBI lawyer, like Mark Devereaux, is just like has like an overhead projector and he has a printout of like the McDonald's rules, the game rules.
Yeah.
And then people, the other lawyer being like, this is not the law.
Right.
Like, just McDonald's game rules.
That is such a classic, district attorney, FBI agent kind of thing. That's like, they follow every rule to the letter so much that they're like, you broke McDonald's rule, dude. Like, you can't do that. Like, that's
you
a
have
no-no.
To spend time in McDonald's jail, actually.
I like when they finally got the jewelry on his wrist, the silver handcuffs. It's like, oh, God. Like, law enforcement people make me sick sometimes.
Yeah, I was actually, like, thinking about that, too. I'm just like, why am I cheering the FBI on?
I know.
This? I was, like, really, like, at a certain point, I'm just like, Gloria, I think it's Brown. Like, I'm just like, let her have something.
Yeah.
Like, why is the FBI is coming after this single mom? Come on.
I mean, all the time, effort, and money they put. That's what I mean. This is such a classic glimpse into, like, the 90s where not much really happened. And the economy in America was going really well. And the FBI had a lot of time and effort to put into this, like, million-dollar hack thing. You know, it's just in the 2020 hindsight, it just seems slightly ridiculous.
Well, so this is kind of like why I thought this was going to be like a fun thing. I'm like, this has to be kind of a joke, right? This is kind of like a low stakes, like a caper, like not like a bloodless Fargo type farce is what I thought. And then immediately you find out there's real life mafia connections. And then you find out like how much energy they're putting into it. And then the emotional part of it that they kind of get to near the end, it's like, oh, well, that really took a few turns I wasn't expecting.
The end is one of the few times in this. Generally, for me, like, you could almost judge a documentary and how much during the documentary I go, what? Or like, no fucking way. Like, if it gets a few of those, it's a good fucking doc. This one got like two from me, and it's definitely at the end when I was like, no fucking way. Like, I even wrote it in big, like, what?
I definitely watched the episode one by myself, and I was kind of bored. And then when I got to the very end, I just said, what? Just to myself.
Exactly.
Like
to no
Angie
one.
Angie was another room. And I was just like, what?
Yes, I did the same thing. I mean, for me, it was a perfect. It's really well. I think the filmmakers did a good job. I mean, we're in this decade now of candy-like documentary filmmaking where it's kind of popish, you know? It's got a pop sensibility to it.
Oh, this one definitely does. I mean, all the color schemes, like, of the intro, it's very, like I said, like a caper. Like, I don't know, like it's like Pixar made it or something.
Yeah, it has a narrative feel to it, which is what I think some documentary filmmakers are going for that a lot these days.
Well, you know, in a weird way, when we're talking about this now, what this reminds me of a little bit is Wild Wild Country in terms of like the structure and the hooks. But I feel like Wild Wild Country had more to say about America in the way this is about America, but sort of like dumb America, I guess, is another way to think about it.
I mean, it's yes, kind of. And it's also it's not really about greed. It's not really about revenge. It's not really about sanctity of law. It's more of just like a bunch of like kooky white people got together and brought in their black friend and did this kind of dumb caper. And it's like, yeah, I mean, it doesn't, it's not like strikes at the heart of anything.
Yeah. Like they're like, this wasn't a victimless crime. Like two businesses went under. I'm like, well, this one business probably should have gone under.
Yeah.
And then the printing press, I think they actually kept going for a while. They got sold in like 2006 or something. So I don't think they like, maybe all those people lost their jobs, but you know, then the economy crashed in 2008. So it was going to happen anyway.
Well, 2001 too. I mean, it's September 12th, 2001, basically the economy took a fucking nosedive. So,
well, yeah, in a weird way, it's like the fact that 9/11 happens during this thing, and it's just like, well, that really threw a wrench in everything we were working on, is like, kind of like, yeah, no shit. This is kind of like what this documentary feels like. It's like inconsequential. Something major happens. Then they're like, we still had to prosecute these people after this.
Right. And I really love, we get introduced to Uncle Jerry's defense attorney later on.
Oh, yeah,
and his
two,
assistant.
Yeah.
I love that guy, man. I want him representing me for every trial that I might
be. Yeah. And also George Chandler, which every time I heard his name, I was like half like, what, me?
That's very George Chen-ish.
Yeah. His lawyer. That's another lawyer. Oh, feel like we should explain, we should set up the clip for Doug
Matthews. Let's do that.
Who is like the kind of star of the first half.
He seems to be the darling of this doc. Let's set it up. We'll go. There's a clip of FBI agent Doug Matthews.
I see this note on the desk, McDonald's monopoly fraud, and I go, give me that damn thing, because I'm bored to death with this healthcare garbage, right? It's important, but I was ready to move on. It seemed like this meeting just took forever. I might have been hungry twice in that meeting.
This was Doug's opportunity to be an undercover agent.
I showed up with a gold suit on. This is like a golden fry suit.
He looks like he's a manager of a McDonald's.
But I had a white shirt on, so I thought I was safe. I wasn't. Man, undercover is awesome.
That is a clip of kind of the star, if you want, or the darling of McMillions, FBI agent Doug Matthews. And the entire – dude, I am not – George, you know me. I am not a fashion icon in any way. However,
yeah, where's this going?
However, the entire time I watched this doc, I was like, can someone get him a smaller shirt? The shirt is just too big. It's too billowy.
That's the most 90s part of this, is a giant shirt.
Yes, that is true. He has a Florida shirt on.
It's Florida. It's just like Florida feels like it's still the 90s there.
How many bad dad jokes does Doug Matthews know? You know he's just sitting on
improv. Like, is he teaching comedy college right now? What is going on?
That's funny. He seems like a guy that would teach an improv comedy class. Is he retired?
He seems like a guy who would take the class and become like the TA of
right.
the class.
Absolutely. The guy that's always like thanking people as they leave and collecting all the brochures and everything.
He's too young to be retired, actually.
I know he does, but like, you know, he was in his 20s, mid to late 20s in the
25
90s.
25 years ago, yeah.
Yeah,
20 years ago.
So he still looks good, that bastard.
Then we should all be retired, basically.
Yeah. Oh, well, I have yet to really work.
Look at my 401k. Oof, a tank.
Yeah.
Ugh, let's not get into it. We're doing the perfect, we have the perfect format for our show right now for these times, just over Skype.
Yes.
We don't have to be in the same room.
We don't have to touch
spitting
anything.
Spitting on each other.
I don't want to touch. And today this is coming out in a few days, but the NBA suspended the entire season indefinitely today, which is crazy news. And then Trump said there'd be no planes coming in or from Europe, and my roommate's in Spain right now, So I'm wondering how that's going to happen.
Yeah, time for a new roommate.
Yay! I kind of gotten sick of him.
Dump
10 years
stuff
is
on
way
the
too
street.
Long. Get yeah. the fuck out of here. So let's talk about just some of these people. I'm just going to bring up names and we'll just talk about them. Okay. So let's start with Jerry Colombo, the man with the plan.
Oh, yeah. Jerry Colombo. Yeah. He, okay. When he decided to make the, turn his strip club into a church, I was like, that's pretty dope.
The best.
Like, dude, you know,
the Church of Fuzzy Bunny. Are you
it's
kidding
dumb,
me?
But in a great way. Yeah,
it's so dumb and so great, and it's like if anybody ever watches gangster stuff, they're always telling them like, "Don't get any press. Don't go out. Don't put your nose in anything." You know?
Yeah.
And there he is. Like they show him on like CNN, and like you yeah. know all the morning shows, and he's in all the news and shit. I love
yeah.
it. Fucking
yeah.
Jerry Colombo. It makes you wonder. What else this guy was into, you know?
Oh, for sure. I did a little bit of research on the Colombo family, too, just to, like, kind of get some idea of what was going on. Seems like he was pretty much on the lower end of the totem pole of the Colombo family. He's, like, a grandson of, I think, the main guy who's the head of that, which is considered the I shouldn't, not to be, I'm not going to belittle a crime family on this show. There is known as one of the five.
Please don't.
Some said they're like, you know, the smallest of the five.
Right.
I have a P.O. box, so.
There you go. Small but mighty. Listed.
Yeah. The Colombo family, it seems like a weird racket to get into, like the strip club racket, and then like this whole racket. Also, South Carolina. Did they explain why they ended up in South Carolina?
I don't remember, but I missed
that. I'm just like, you know, the very common Sicilian community of South Carolina. It's very well known for their Sicilian community.
Yeah, Frank Colombo, who is his little brother, who's
I kind of liked Frank.
Yeah.
I feel like he actually just tweeted at you.
At SupDoc.
Yeah. Frank did tweet at us, so Frank may be listening. Hi, Frank.
Hi, Frank. Thanks for the tweet, and thank you for putting this doc together. He tweeted at us, and it's awesome, but he seems very, like, contrite, I guess I would say. But he also seems like he has a lot of fun with the fact that his family is like a made connected family, and that his, you know, that Jerry was his brother, and you know, and was, and I guess he wasn't really connected to the scam.
That's a good question. There's another sibling relationship in here that's a little bit similar, like Jerry Jacobson's kind of stepbrother is also a major figure in this.
Yeah.
It seems like he could have partaken in this. And it sounds like he did a few things like it seemed like there was a huge fight between Robin, Jerry's wife, and him, and that side of the family. So that ended up being, I think, some stuff was disappeared. That's kind of what I've gathered, but it seems like he wasn't like a full on dude. He was trying to live a somewhat legit life.
I feel like his wife's got him on a little short leash as well.
Yeah.
She seems like she's in this doc a lot. Frank's wife, who I'm sorry, Frank, but I can't remember your wife's name. But she seems to be like, hey, listen, you're not going to stray too far into this. Let's talk about Robin though.
Yeah.
I mean, for me, Robin was my favorite part of this documentary. Cause I grew up, no offense, Robin, but I grew up in very white trash America where there's a lot of like women like this around that I loved talking to because they always had a cigarette. They generally had a rum and Diet Coke in the other hand and just were like, no bullshit. I'm going to tell you how it is. And I got a lot of crazy stories. And I love these kind of people. I love these kind of ladies. So
she kind of lost me in the very beginning by calling Jackie Chan a Chinaman. And then I kind of like had to build my empathy back up for her. I'm like, yeah, no, recidivism is a thing. And like women in the women in incarceration is like a big issue. And then but then she also like, yeah, it was weird how the camera went from like, a very made up version of Robin.
Oh, interesting.
A very dolled up Robin to then just Robin on her couch.
Right.
And like smoking her cigs.
Yeah, that is true.
It was like an interesting reveal.
It did kind of vacillate between her being all made up and with like a lot of jewelry on and then just in like a striper t-shirt and just chilling on the couch. But she is pretty, she's in this a lot, and she is the wife of Jerry Colombo, and you really get a sense that she was like, you know, I will go so far, but if you push me too far, then that's really it, you know, kind of people.
Yeah, earrings come off, yeah.
The earrings will come off. And then they do mention that she does end up going to jail for some time, I think for check fraud.
Check fraud, yeah.
And some other stuff. And then kind of, you know, finally has the FBI come in, and she's like, okay, listen, I got some stuff to say. Because a lot of people always go like, I got a kid. Like, it's always like, I feel like if I'm going to get into crime, I should have a kid, and I should just do mail fraud. Because it seems like they got a lot of these guys are like this was six fucking episodes, like hours of time that we had. And then the sentences were like, you get 2 weeks and you're going to have to pay up to $2,500.
The amount that they're paying back now is like ridiculous. It's like, that's like my car insurance.
I know. I'm like, well, shit. I mean, for $176 a month, like, what the fuck? Why not?
Now, when we mentioned Gloria earlier, it did seem like, for some people, it basically was a bad deal. Like, you're getting $50,000 a year, but it's split with another person, like 50-50.
No, that's just dumb.
And you had to pay up front for the tickets. Like,
and
she had
taxes.
To take out a mortgage on her home. And then she didn't even think about the taxes. And then so she basically was like, well, I can't live that large because everyone thinks that I won this money, but I am actually making as much as I was making before.
Yeah, it's so dumb.
As a social worker. Yeah.
It's so dumb. And even Glum, and he mentions the same thing. He's like, wait, after a while, I'm like, this is dumb. I'm not even making any money. You know, like, I don't understand. It's like, it seems like if someone was going to approach you with these kind of ideas, you really should just sit down and think about, like, is it worth my time and effort? You know, am I going to make a bunch of money or not? You know?
Yeah, I mean, like, look, I mean, even if you win $1 million in a somewhat legitimate fashion, and then you take out 30% of that for taxes, and then it's like, if you win the lottery, I think they also do it over time, right? I think you can do lump sum or over time.
Right.
So, yeah, they're still doing this campaign, though.
It's back.
McDonald's is still doing, and they're probably doing it now because they got all this publicity from this HBO series.
Yeah, and that Amy Murray,
the marketing woman who worked for marketing at McDonald's. Yeah,
yeah, they she may be retired too. I don't know, but it seems like she's back. And then for the people who have not seen this documentary, we're probably making almost no sense because we are all over the place. But it's just there's so much.
Six
to talk
hours.
About.
I mean, it's so much.
Yeah, and it's crazy, but Amy Murray is in this documentary a lot. She's the marketing director of McDonald's, and the FBI actually uses her to set up like these video
Shamrock Productions. My favorite.
Oh my god, that's Shamrock right. Shamrock. It sounds like a porn company, doesn't it? Like Shamrock Productions,
like Irish porn.
Like
I don't know.
One of those horrible '90s porn thing. You know, it's like, anyways. Not that I want.
Like I now Googling '90s porn just to see.
Yeah,
what was going on there.
But they set up these. What were they? They were like the winners.
Yeah, like they're like interviews to just catch people. They're just trying to catch people in a lie.
They brought in the winners, and they were trying to catch them all in lies, basically. And it's like, if I worked with the mob and made $1 million in this scam, the last thing I would ever do is sit in front of a camera.
To go to fucking Vegas or something.
Yeah, the last thing I would do. And they also talk, what's his name, Mike Hoover was another guy.
Oh, God, Mike Hoover, yeah.
God bless him. And who we find out later through Glum was a coke dealer. Which I was like,
he seems like he's still alive too. Like I was, there's a bunch of like, where are they now articles? Cause there's like 50 characters from this thing.
Yeah.
So there's a bunch of where are they now articles. And like, he obviously did not participate in the film.
Right. No, I wouldn't imagine he would. And then, let's end with, a little buddy tale, the tales of two buddies, Dwight Baker, the older cat that basically went to the airport to find his sister-in-law, and his buddy George Chandler, who was his adopted son, a foster kid. Yeah, what a strange What a strange such a weird pair.
Dynamic. Yeah. I don't know how to feel about it still.
It's like, weird. It's weird because I felt the same way about Dwight Baker as I thought about the father and Abducted in Plain Sight. Like this kind of like,
yeah,
like lying through the skin of their teeth. Like, I'm a good guy. I didn't understand. I just wanted to make a couple bucks and I didn't want to get anybody else in trouble. But it's like, no, that is not what happened. And it's obviously not true.
Yeah, like they left the phone on in the car and the FBI was listening. Oh, my God.
Every time there's, it's so funny in true crime docs how many, like, one tiny mistake just opens the floodgates. But I didn't really believe Dwight. Sorry, Dwight. I didn't really believe him. Don't believe you when you were saying I didn't want to bring, because as far as I remember in the doc, they mentioned that George actually mentions that it was Dwight that told the FBI about him, you know?
Yeah, so it's like, right. Well,
and then George is this interesting character who didn't go beyond the ninth grade and has like some genius IQ, I guess.
Well, yeah, he just like worked very hard. He just had like a knack for business. He actually sounded like he made his own money. Like he didn't really need this money
right,
to start with. It was just like a headache. And his name is George Chandler. So I was like, I'm very invested in what happens to him. He also has a pretty good singing voice.
Real good.
I feel like, yeah, he better than most karaoke people.
Yeah, he's got a real good singing voice.
Yeah, sure. But yeah, I guess, I don't know if he was Mormon also. Dwight's Mormon. It seems like he really like broke a lot of, he's excommunicated from the Latter-day Saints. And he's trying to get his way back in. I don't know if going on this documentary is going to help you rejoin the Mormon Church.
I have a feeling that's in his rearview mirror at this point. And then last...
Glom.
Yeah, he's a character. Holy shit.
He's my favorite.
He was awesome. I would love to have a couple fucking bourbons with that dude and just talk to him about his life. It seems like he is sitting on a treasure trove of fucking anecdotes, I would imagine.
I'm sure like they considered that, just like, should we do a 6-part series on just this guy,
right?
Like, because that's what I want now, is I want the Glom story.
Have you ever met somebody like him in your life?
My friend Randy Lee is kind of like a guy who just has like these crazy stories and you think they're kind of bullshit and then they turn out to be
real,
mostly true.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, okay.
I've had a few of those people in my life and they're my favorite. That's why I'm so drawn to biographies and documentaries. Like, I, you know, truth is better than fiction. It's like, I love this kind of stuff. And the fact that like this guy is like, yeah, so I was just partying in Morocco and wanted to fucking do some
amyl nitrate with Harold Pinter.
Yeah. Some poppers. I just wanted to do some poppers, man. And then his friend's like, hey, can you get me some Quaaludes? And then he's like into some like $1 million fucking drug empire.
Yeah.
And all these guys look like they work at Lowe's. They all look like they work in the wood section at fucking Home Depot. They look like super regular folks. You
know? Does it feel very, there's a very Southern, there's a lot of Southern quality to this. And I will say like that is something like the accents, like it's all Florida, Georgia, South Carolina, and it feels like a Florida man type of story in a way.
That's interesting.
It's like kind of an early Florida man.
Yeah.
Like the early version of that.
And so in this segment, let's wrap up with the big spoiler. Let's wrap up with the big news, the headline. What do you think?
Do you know what I'm talking about?
You know what I'm talking
maybe
about?
Maybe don't know what you're talking about.
The end, like the who we find out is the informant.
Right. The informant. Who, like, it's kind of not, they don't really, like, have an interview with this person at all.
No.
So it's just like, there's a bunch of red herrings about who the initial informant was that tipped off the FBI. And is it verified? Or it's pretty much verified that it is Jerry Colombo's mom.
Ma Colombo. Grandma Colombo.
So that's, she could get her grandkid, basically.
That's crazy. Dude.
Yeah. Because she's like in the family.
In the fucking family. Ma Colombo turns out to be the FBI informant. Because A, she hated Robin.
Yeah.
B, her son is dead, so what the fuck? Who cares? C, she wants to get her grandson not to have to go back to Robin once Robin gets let out of jail.
So this is my question. Do Frank and his mom get along?
Frank and his mom. Oh, you know what? I don't know.
It seems like no, because he said that on camera.
Right.
And he's not at the birthday parties or anything.
He's not. You're right. But yeah. But Robin is, which is crazy.
Oh, and then, yeah. And the then fact Robin, that Robin.
Yeah. And then Robin's like, yeah, I'm the favorite daughter-in-law now. It's like, what? Families are so weird.
I know. It's like, did you watch Years and Years, another HBO show? It's kind of like that daughter-in-law relationship.
Right.
Like, where, like, everyone's sick of the husband. They're just like, yeah, well, we're actually close now, even though you hated me in the beginning and I thought you were racist. So Robin, she kind of, like, comes around to being back in her son's life, staying out of jail, hopefully, being friends with Gloria again.
Yeah.
A lot of reunions happen at the end of this. The other bizarre reunion, Mark Devereaux, the prosecutor, and Jerry Colombo's half-brother or stepbrother end up being homies.
That's weird.
So weird.
It's so
such
weird.
A weird time.
I know. It's very, very strange. So that basically is McMillions. I mean, we barely scratched the surface of really...
I get it. Scratched the surface.
We're all winners now.
Paco, can I ask you a game question?
Yeah, sure.
So Monopoly, McDonald's, perfect combination. What is another board game or game that you would pair with another fast food chain?
Okay. I would do... I would probably do Scrabble and Subway. Scrabble and Subway.
Okay. I could see that.
Yeah. It's kind of because you have to go through that line and they turn... It's like turning over a piece...
You
know what I'm saying?
Yeah, like a little slice of cheese have letters on them or something.
Yes, exactly.
Subway needs a new campaign. They need to wash the taste out of the mouth of the last few campaigns.
How did they not go under? That's what I don't understand.
Another Jerry. That's another Jerry. Jared Fogle.
Oh, right. Another Jerry. Jesus. Let's see. One other one might be... Oh, I don't know.
I was thinking of Jack in the Box and Cards Against Humanity.
Oh, wow. I could see that. They have the same kind
late
of language.
Late night, late night, like misanthropic. I don't know. You grew up with the Hardee's?
Yes. Yeah, there's Hardee's Burgers.
Or Carl's
Jr.
out here. I don't know. I feel like I can't think of a game. That's like a puzzle. That's just like you get Connect Four and Hardee's.
That's interesting. Okay, so let's play Cast This Doc.
Gotta cast this doc. Gotta cast this doc.
All right, so I have a few.
Okay, you go.
I'm going to go, and I'm going to do a few of these. So Cast This Doc. Jerry Colombo, I am going to cast with Glenn Fleischer. Now, he plays the mob guy on Barry, the Ukrainian mob guy.
Oh, yeah. That's what I was thinking of. I didn't know that guy's name. He's great. Yeah.
Yes.
Perfect.
He's an amazing actor. Glenn Fleischer or James Gandolfini, RIP.
Okay.
Frank Colombo, I'm thinking a young Pesci.
Oh,
a younger Joe Pesci with no hair.
Okay. Gotcha.
Yeah.
I could see that.
Okay. Who else did I have? Oh, George Chandler, your namesake, Dwight Yoakam.
Oh, yeah.
Huh?
I totally see that. Was he in Sling Blade?
Sure he was.
Yeah.
Hell yeah, he was. Yeah.
Okay.
Robin, Jerry Colombo's wife, Cloris Leachman.
Someone on Twitter said, I think, Amy Sedaris, which is perfect.
Or
she is like Strangers with Candy. Like, I took the McDonald's ticket. I did some
funny.
Check frauds.
I was also thinking maybe Danny DeVito for her.
Oh,
but
the Penguin. You know, very the Penguin.
I guess Doug Matthews has to be Wahlberg. I mean, one of the executive producers of this.
Oh, yeah. Kind of, the doofusy Wahlberg for sure.
A doofusy dad jokey Wahlberg. Yeah.
So I had an interesting pick for Doug. Matt, are you? I don't know if I cut
That's
you
it.
Off. But
yep. No.
Yeah.
Please.
There's a comic named Connor O'Malley who does all these weird, like, social media, like, where things where he's just yelling in the camera. He's married to Adi Bryant. If you watched Shrill, did you watch Shrill this season?
No.
He makes some appearances on Shrill. He's just like this guy with like a giant head who like yells and has like these giant teeth. And I could kind of see him having like the hyperactive energy of Doug Matthews. But nice. Then it would just become like immediately like weirder by casting Connor O'Malley. So that's my choice for Doug Matthews. I'll send you a picture and you'll see what I'm talking about.
All right, cool.
And then for Frank Colombo, I had Enrico Colantoni, if you remember the show Veronica Mars.
Yes.
Or he was on, I think, Just Shoot Me. He was amazing. Oh. He's a perfect guy for that.
Right.
Yeah, he's interesting for that one. I think that I kind of wanted to do for Dwight, I was thinking maybe, I think Jerry Orbach would either be Dwight or Jerry Colombo. Or not Jerry Colombo, Jerry Jacobson.
Right. How about John Goodman for Dwight?
Oh, that's an interesting. That would make me like him more.
Oh,
I would like. Yeah, it would make him more likable for sure.
Okay. Yeah.
So
that's true.
I don't know if I want to make him super likable.
True.
Yeah, and then I didn't really have any of the female characters down. I just was spending my time just trying to figure out the name of Enrico Colantino.
Yeah, I remember that dude.
Yeah.
Awesome. Do you have a doc you'd like to pitch?
Oh, yeah. Pitch and a doc.
Pitch a doc time. And for folks who are just listening for the first time, first of all, where the hell have you been? Second, we also play a doc where we call, play a game where we call pitch a doc, where we basically have an idea that we're not sure it's ever been made into a doc that should be made into a doc.
Yeah, I just researched. Well, I came across, for a sad reason, this guy came up in a Wikipedia search, but there's a guy who is named Robert Opel, O-P-E-L, and he was most famous for streaking across the Academy Awards stage in 1974.
That's
but
awesome.
He was also an artist. He owned a gallery. He did a lot of work in San Francisco's gay community. He did a bunch of performance stuff. He was friends with like Robert Mapplethorpe and did stuff with Tama Finland. And he was unfortunately murdered in San Francisco in his gallery in 79, right after the death of Harvey Milk and Moscone. So he's a pretty interesting character, crossed all these different areas. And I don't think I just learned about this guy. There's some pretty good articles about him. Yeah, just, oh, wait a minute. There is a documentary about him. God damn it.
I just found that out. What's his name?
Oh, Robert Opel. Okay, so he had a nephew named Robert Opel, spelled O-P-P-E-L, and his documentary is called Uncle Bob. Okay, so
there you go.
This has now become a plug where we got to watch this. We got to watch Uncle Bob. He made a film about it. God damn it. I'm glad that I saw this before.
Well, maybe
he's not getting corrected by the internet.
Maybe his nephew will come on SupDoc, Robert Opel.
Yeah, Robert Opel, come talk about your uncle. I'm sorry I didn't know about your film.
Can't know about all of them.
Oh, man. Well, it's good to find this now. And they actually like resurrected his gallery in 2014. Or they did a tribute to his gallery in 2014 down here in LA. So, yeah, interesting dude in the leather awesome. Scene of San Francisco. Yeah.
Awesome. I just want to, there's got to be a doc about Jack London. I did some research the other day because I went to Jack London's, there's a bar that he used to drink at in Jack London Square.
Yeah.
And it's like kind of topsy turvy. It basically sits on an edge. It's so cool. It's tiny, it's super tiny.
I don't know if I've been to that one, but I've been to like a speakeasy type bar that's right around that part of town that supposedly is where he lived. Like it was like a boarding house or something at some point.
This might be the same place.
It might be the same place. Maybe
Does it seat like five people comfortably?
No, it was a little bigger than that. I can't remember the name of it either. It's been years. So, but yeah. He's obviously has a lot of Bay Area connections. Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome. Okay. So that was the part of this next segment where we generally talk about upcoming docs we're excited for. I was just thinking about this. I'm not sure. Do you have any that you are coming up that you're kind of like jazzed about?
Well, We just did an interview. I did that interview last time with Arthur and Giorgio, who made the Feels Good Man doc. And they were supposed to show it at South by Southwest, got canceled. I think there's a bunch of festivals they were supposed to go to. All of them got canceled. They said to check out True False Festival, which is in Columbia, Missouri. And that apparently, like, that is a great circuit for undiscovered docs. I haven't heard about too much recently. I just finished watching I watched some fiction stuff, honestly, Paco. Like, did you watch The Outsider?
Speaking of
HBO?
Not yet.
Oh, man. Yeah. That's a good casting in that.
That's what I've heard. Yeah, I've been I'm highly addicted to Better Call Saul, so I've been catching up on that. And that's, I don't know if there's any other real series I've been watching too much. I just but what the one thing we have to mention that we have not yet mentioned, because this is, but the fucking Corey Feldman doc.
We do need to see that.
It was just launched or aired or whatever it was. Whatever happened. It sounds nuts. Really more of the spectacle around the doc versus the doc. I haven't really heard much about if the doc was
any. I read a review of it. I think it was on Rolling Stone's website, and it does drop a couple bombs. But yeah, so Corey Feldman and his good friend Corey Haim, child actors together. For years, Corey Feldman's been saying, I'm going to drop like the names of some people who like abused both of us when we were kids. And this is his feature length film premiere to do it. And he built his own website that you pay to watch the film on. And
right.
So there's a lot of weird levels to this.
It was also simultaneously playing live in New York at a theater. LA.
Or LA, yeah, I think. Yeah, I forget what theater, but it's in the Rolling Stone review. And I think our buddy Corey Sklar, who's been on the show, was going to do a screening. And then I guess whenever the website broke down, Corey Feldman thinks it's a conspiracy that someone tried to hack his website.
Right.
Could be that it just crashed from everyone trying to watch it.
Yeah.
I guess he's kind of taking that stream stuff on your own website model that we learned from another famous abuser. Maybe abusers. Yeah, you can say someone who crossed some boundaries. He crossed a boundary of the streaming services by hosting his own series on his own website.
So. Why you don't use Squarespace?
Yeah.
All right, so let's get into some SupDoc news and updates. We don't have too many other than...
Why are we announcing
other than our 5 years is coming up, which is amazing. 5 years in May. So in May, we'll have our 5 year anniversary, which is crazy for a little scampering documentary recap podcast.
Gonna say bi-coastal, but we are monocoastal. We are monocoastal, but like by California bifurcated.
That's right. California bifurcated. Bur-da-dum-dum. But other than that, just follow us on Twitter and Instagram at SupDocPodcast. Email us at SupDocPodcast@gmail.com. And let us know if you're listening. Let us know what we got right, what we got wrong. Who would you like to be on our podcast? What docs we should be watching and talking about and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Shout out to Nick Coltis, who suggested we do McMillions. And we were both only like two episodes into this, I think. Like a week ago, so we really had to catch up to do this. And I think, I would say I'd recommend it as like light popcorn fare, essentially.
Yeah. And you could watch it with the family. It's there's nothing too crazy in this. You can watch it with the
watch
family.
Watch it with your crime family.
Get your family together.
Have some spaghetti.
And so, any shows you got coming up you want to plug?
Oh, I don't even know if my show this weekend.
Oh, fuck, yeah.
This weekend, I have a show that might get canceled. I guess first Thursday is Giant Robot on Sawtelle, West Side. Hopefully, it's going to be happening.
West Side.
I think we got Richard Cervate on that one in April. And I'm not sure. I'm not sure what to plug. I'm not sure if humanity has is going to be point. Around by the time good we drop. Point. This will drop regardless, but
this will be out there regardless. You can't get the coronavirus from our podcast. I'm headlining Milk next week. Oh, nice. I actually had two shows that got canceled. I have a show at the Punchline April 1st on April Fool's Day that may or may not happen. I'm hoping it will. So come to the Punchline April 1st. And I have another show I'm doing at Brick and Mortar. They're doing comedy shows now.
Okay.
Which is nice. An awesome venue. I always wondered why they didn't do comedy there.
Yeah. I know that spot. That's cool. Yeah,
that's... March 29th, me and Chris Riggins are going to do like a jazz comedy show
there. Is there going to be instrumentation?
There's going to be a jazz band. Yeah, it's going to be awesome.
You've been tickling the ivories with Stephen Lynch, I saw.
I did, dude. Oh, yes, I did. I just played with Stephen Lynch in Vegas on the Strip at the House of Blues. My first time ever in Las Vegas. And it was my birthday, and I had a bunch of friends come with me to Vegas, and we partied hard, and Stephen was in town, and he was like, hey, why don't you play the piano on a song with me? And I was like, okay, that'd be fun. And then it turned into, hey, why don't you play the song, the piano on like three or four songs with me? And I was like, I don't play by ear. And he's like, he doesn't read music, and I don't play by ear. I read music. So I'm like, I need to know what songs. And he's like, oh, I'll get to you. You know, and then I've known Steven for years. And then finally, like Friday night, we played on Saturday night in Vegas. And Friday night, he was like, how about these songs? And I was like, okay, cool. And then I actually hit up a friend, David Siegel, who did the theme to Sup Doc. I asked him to please transcribe Steven's song for me. Because I was a little drunk, man, and a little like scared that I'd get it wrong. And thank you, David, for doing that. It was great. He did a great job, and I managed to learn. And I met Steven at his hotel room. We went over the songs. And then I get to the House of Blues, dude, for 7 p.m. sound check. And Steven, what a beautiful, gracious person. He literally was like, why don't you open the show and do some stand-up?
Last-minute opening in Vegas at the House of Blues.
Yeah. First time in Vegas, and I got to open the show. I did some stand-up. I did really well. People liked it, and then I played on four songs with them. Had a great time. It was awesome. I hope hopefully it'll happen again. And if you want, this is a couple more things. Steven was on like episode 20? Like
18 or something.
Or 18. He did Smashing Machine, that documentary. And I just learned from Steven that The Rock bought the rights to that story.
Oh.
And is going to be making a biopic.
Wow.
So we should have Steven back on.
Yeah, for sure. Do a biopsy with him. Yeah, for sure.
Do a biopsy with him and whatever that movie's going to be called. So, yes. So, well, thank you for bringing that up. It was an awesome way to first step your feet into Vegas, which can be weird and smelly.
And a great birthday. So happy birthday to
you. Thank you, buddy.
Well.
I appreciate that.
Everyone on Twitter, wish Paco a happy birthday. And everyone on Patreon, wish Paco a happy Patreon. And,
I would love it if you guys went to patreon.com/supdogpodcast and donated $1 a month to my birthday, or $5 a month.
Yeah, and we're going to walk out on the music that was created by David Siegel.
We are.
Our theme song.
Exactly. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Thanks, George. And wait. How many Herzogs do you give this, McMillions?
Oh, yeah, it's like a 6.
Okay.
I think that's my 10. Standard Herzog.
Yeah, I'd give it a 6. I got to say, I'd give it a 6. 6 Herzogs. All right, folks, thanks for listening. Thanks, George. Continue to listen, tell your friends about SupDoc, download, subscribe, send them episodes that you dig, and we'll talk to you real soon.
Hey, thanks for listening. You can find out more about SupDoc at supdocpodcast.com.
We've been recapping reality since 2015.
Our theme song was written by David Siegel, and our show was engineered by Will Scoville.
For as little as $1 a month, you can donate to this show through our Patreon page, patreon.com/supdocpodcast.
If you want to help us out in other ways, please share the show with friends. And don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe on Apple Podcasts.
Find out more about Paco and George's comedy gigs on the About Us page on our website.
SupDoc is by Doc fans for Doc fans. So if you want to advertise with SupDoc, got a film you want to recommend, or any opinions, please hit us up.
Email us at supdocpodcast@gmail.com.
Play McDonald's Millionaire Monopoly. Free plug.
Very, very free plug. We should get a burger out of that.